Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Georgia Wrestling Now, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on the local scene in Georgia and around the Southeast region, as well as interviews with the newsmakers. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Georgia Wrestling Now.
All right. Thanks for listening to Georgia Wrestling Now. This is Jonathan Williams from WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, being joined, as always, by Team All You Can Eat's Matt Hankins, and as well tonight by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com's Larry Goodman. And tonight is our first anniversary edition of Georgia Wrestling Now. So I want to thank both of you for being part of that.
And I didn't get a ring or nothing, Jonathan. No dinner, no flowers, no nothing.
Well,
I am jilted.
I didn't get anything either.
I thought that was your job.
Take it up with Rich Tate.
I will. There's a fiery email about this.
Dear Seriously, though, congratulations, Jonathan, because it's booking one of these shows for a whole year can be an arduous task. So congratulations to you for staying the course with this.
He is the rudder of this outfit.
Well, thanks, Larry. Thanks, Matt. How long did you do your Monday night show, Larry?
I don't think we lasted the second go go round with Murder One and Trent. I think I want to say no more than six months, maybe not even that long.
Oh, okay.
Well, that combustible element, I think you outdone yourself.
So tonight's a big night. Before we went on the air, I was kind of filling Matt in on some of the happenings that I've heard about in Rampage, and that's sort of why you're calling, though, Larry. But first, I want to thank Matt for interviewing the mysterious and handsome stranger from Chikara. He was supposed to call in last Monday and just slipped his mind. He had one of those Danny-only-like weekends of wrestling all over the Northeast and was driving into Canada when he remembered that he was supposed to call us. So he emailed me and apologized and offered to do whatever he could to make up for it. So Matt interviewed him, and that was on WrestlingWithPopCulture.com. It still is there, actually. And I think Larry can attest to this at the Chikara show at the Pro South Arena on Saturday in Piedmont. He got probably the biggest pop through the curtain of anybody else on the show.
I would attest to that, yes.
Yeah, he was. definitely was over with the fans before he even did anything. So it's a mystery to me how people in Piedmont, Alabama even knew who he was, but maybe it was just the cowboy hat. But that was one of the more comical matches. It turned into Scooby-Doo. He was wrestling the Assail Ant, and they started running in and out of the there was an entrance for heels, faces, and then a third entrance for referees and announcers and things like that. And they started going in and out of those doors and coming out and going back in and coming out of the doors. And at one point, the stranger reached, they both ran out, and he reached back into his door, and somehow his hand came out the other door and grabbed the assailant and pulled him back through.
I'm glad somebody still has fun at wrestling shows.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that was a fun show. What did you think of it, Larry, overall?
I was overall entertained. I liked the comedy a lot, and I really liked the I thought the main event between Mark Anglicetti and Green Ant was really, really well done, really excellent, and that they kept the comedy toned down a little bit because Anglicetti's got the cup now. And I also liked the comedy of Los Ice Creams in the tag match, and the match with Gran Akuma was also really good. I guess I would say definitely the second half was a lot stronger than the first half. There's a lot of shaky spots and sloppy stuff in the first half, and, of course, I recognize that a lot of those guys don't have a lot of experience. Overall, I'd recommend it for sure.
Yeah, I have to agree. The I don't know if comedy is the ice cream, Los Ice Creams. I think for that one kid in the front row, it might have been terror or horror more than comedy. But they were fun in a very odd way. And I agree about the first half. Kyle Matthews and Ace Haven had a pretty good match. That was the first match. And then what else was there? One thing that's weird about their shows is they have teams and stables and factions, and within those they have people who are clearly face and clearly heel. So they'll even come out through different entrances if they're wrestling the same match and stuff like that. I thought that was interesting.
It was a pleasure to see Sugar Dunkerton perform again, and it's all, you know, Chuck Taylor is always entertaining, so I was glad to see them.
Yeah, that was one of the matches where I first noticed that was they were on the same team but came out different entrances, and the other guy's name was Icarus, I believe. Chuck Taylor and Icarus were clearly on the same page, but they wouldn't even high five Sugar Dunkerton anytime he tried to show some sort of camaraderie with them. Let's see. You guys were both at different shows. I believe you were at UIW on Saturday, Matt.
I was there. I was in the building.
Anything happened there? I saw pictures of Fred Yehi with a title belt over his shoulder. What was that?
Fred did not win the belt. He was wrestling stupid, and he got hairy at the end, so he did not actually win the belt. But I think he did firmly place himself in the four-way that will be going on at their bigger show on the 27th this month, where he'll be fighting for that title again. So our little Freddy's growing up. It was very interesting to watch Fred in that particular match with Stupid. And look, I know that people have varying opinions of Stupid. Larry Goodman, I know, is one of those people who has maybe a less than favorable opinion. But I think if you watch him long enough, you kind of get it. And it was really neat to see Fred in a match that wrestling is not the primary focus of the match. You know, he's got to deal with Stupid's antics. He's got to deal with Tweety on the outside. And so it's really neat to get to see him kind of have to step out of his normal comfort zone and be in that environment. It was interesting. I won't say it was necessarily that good, but it was certainly interesting. And I think going forward, it's going to help him out. And then you had the team of Shane Marks and Jagged Edge, who are the Empire out there, and their manager, the Double D or something, I don't know. And they actually introduced a third member of this enclave in the form of Murder One. So, you know, out there, Murder's got a pretty evil reputation, as he does in most places. And I think even at one point, he went as far as shanking Bull Buchanan in a match that ended with the police coming in and a lot going on. So they brought him in to kind of oppose Bull Buchanan, who Shane was supposed to wrestle a couple weeks ago, but due to circumstances beyond anyone's control, Bull had to leave. Now, the Empire claims that he left because he was scared. The real reason that was given was he had a family emergency. And so Bull slated to go later in the night in a title defense against the Russian Assassin. So that happens. Pretty quick match, you know. The Assassin's not quite on Bull's level, so Bull rolls him up, 1, 2, 3. Well, then as soon as the three count goes, Shane Marks in the ring like a shot of lightning from the back, followed closely by the Jagged Edge, and they commence to work Bull's knee over. And they even do a big dive off the top, land right on the knee, so Bull's down for the count. Murder comes in to sort of finish him off, but little did we know, Murder had an alternate plan. He stops short of Bull, lays out both Marks and Jagged Edge, tells the people there that the only person of color, and he does mean of color, who's going to lay hands on Bull there is Murder One. And so that gets a different reaction than anyone expected from the crowd. They love Murder now, and so that sets up the big October 27th, probably main event, I would suspect, between Murder One and Shane Marks. And as far as I know, it's the first time those two will ever be in the ring together, and I cannot wait to see it. But it was interesting to see Murder One be adored by that fan base who's seen him do awful things.
And Larry,
that was the main take home from there.
How was Murder One, I'm sure, was at Rampage yesterday as well, right,
Larry? In all his glory, taking Dan Masters hostage on the ramp and stealing his watch to hold off that madman, Dr. Johnny Gayton, or Doc Gayton, as he's now being called. It was a crazy show. I mean, you know, there were several things that took place that were not on the format, and you could tell it was not on the format by the way, you know, the way people were reacting, like, holy shit. You know, Doc, when Doc puts his mind to it, you just don't know what the man may do, and I certainly didn't expect to see him pull his shoe off and start hitting himself in the head with it, but he did, and you know, there was the usual. You know, one of the things that was really entertaining was seeing AJ Steele as the voice of reason, calming Doc down out there, trying to be cool, calm, and collected while Doc is going completely insane. So yeah, there were several. The long and the short of it is, it all builds to a big cage match at Doctoberfest on October 28th, with Doc and Steele against Murder One and J Rod, and Doc is promising to break both of J-Rod's arms, and AJ Steele is promising that the blood will flow. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Unfortunately, they were up against the National Fair, the Georgia National Fair in Perry, Georgia, which is a big deal down there, and they only had 90 people, which is the lowest they've had since Murder and Ben Masters took over the booking and promoting there. But it was very, you know, it was an entertaining show for sure. And the other thing that, of course, is a lot of PCW talent invasion there, and they all handled themselves well. Nino Monet did it. Siler has been moved into the cash vault. We had a no-show by Zane Riley, who was Bobby Moore's partner, canceled out. And Siler Cross is now in the cash vault with Bobby Moore and holding the tag team title.
I guess so, walk in. It's not a bad place to walk in.
Right. Pandora's Nina Monet wrestled Tracy Taylor. Pandora wrestled Tracy Taylor, and Pandora and Tracy have a rematch. And Pandora and Nina are now billing themselves as Platinum Perfection. Yeah. And Shane Marks debuted and had a fine match there. So it was a pleasure to see all that happen. Yeah, very, very good quality. So interesting contrast to the Chikara show, of course, obviously in the style of the wrestling. But every bit as good, if not better, in the actual wrestling was Rampage than the Chikara show from top to bottom.
All right. Well, I believe we've got our first guest for tonight's show on the line. He's a familiar voice to listeners of the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network, as he's one of the co-hosts of Ringside Rap, at least I believe he still is. But his history goes way back farther than that in wrestling, and that is Les Thatcher.
How's it going tonight, guys?
All right, how are you?
I'm good. Hanging in there. It's Monday.
Yeah, which means it's time for Georgia Wrestling Now, of course.
Of course.
So I understand you are doing a seminar up in Deep Southern Championship Wrestling this Saturday and Sunday. Is that right?
That is correct, yeah. Saturday and Sunday, we're up in Blue Ridge, Georgia, at the NWA Deep South Championship Wrestling Arena. And we're going to start Saturday and Sunday morning at 9, break for an hour lunch, and then train. I think there's a show Saturday night, but Sunday we'll train till about 5 or 6 as well. And I understand it'll be guys, you know, all ranges of experience. So I'm really looking forward to it. I guess from what I hear now, we're going to have about 25 kids. And there's always room for more. If here's a shameless plug. If somebody's interested in signing up for more info, you can email dscwrestling@yahoo.com or call Woody, who's the promoter, 706-889-1803.
All right. Well, that's part of why we had you on here, so no reason to feel any shame about plugging it. So, do you also still run the wrestling school with Ricky Steamboat and Harley Race?
Well, that actually was never was anything physical in that.
Okay.
I had sold my business in 2003. And the three of us got together and did a couple camps, and it just ran well together. So we came up with the name, Elite Pro Wrestling Training. And actually, it is me, myself, and I right now. Harley is taking care of his school in Eldon. Ricky, of course, is on the staff of WWE and is one of the head trainers in Florida. They're developmental. So it's myself. We've done, you know, the whole concept of the manual, the Elite Pro Wrestling Training Manual, or the system that I use is a conglomeration, I guess, of Ricky Harley, myself, Tommy Pritchard, you know, and a few bits and pieces here from, you know, you're always learning and always trying to be better. But I guess in general, it's just, you know, for good sound basics, good psychology, and, you know, that the little things mean so much more than the big things. They make the big things work a lot of times. And when I say little things like facial expressions, body language, timing, pacing, things like that.
All right. Are those things you think are either natural to a guy sort of in the beginning, or can they be learned very well? It seems like that'd be a tough thing for someone who just doesn't have it to find a grasp hold of.
This is a unique business, and I have seen good athletes, you know, college-level athletes that couldn't do it. Just, I mean, it wasn't they weren't good athletes. They just couldn't catch on. And I've seen guys who had no athletic background turn into good workers. I've turned out a couple like that, names that you wouldn't know, you know, but because of size or, you know, some limitation or another, you know, that they were never going to make the big time anyway, but turned into tremendous workers. So it's amazing. You got to work with somebody over a period of time. That's why I don't believe in setting actually a time limit. Nigel McGuinness is probably the best worker I ever trained, and he, you know, he wasn't an overnight sensation. I couldn't have told you a month into his training how, you know, how good he was going to be, because it took him a while. And then I've seen other guys come out of the, you know, come out of the shoot thinking, wow, this guy's going to be a natural. And they hit their peak quickly and you know, it flatlines and levels out, and they get to a certain point, and that's the best they can be. I mean, you know, so it's strange. It's a strange pursuit. It really is. A lot of it is, though, you know, when I mentioned a couple guys that turned into tremendous workers, they had no athletic background. These guys were indeed, you know, fans and, you know, had been fans since very young. And I think that's a key ingredient you don't see a lot so much today, because a lot of guys at the higher level, because of having a great physique or some sort of acting skills, you know, kind of get tied up into it as though, you know, it's a part to play in a, you know, in a series, which it is obviously to a certain degree today. But still, the basics are still should be the basics.
You mentioned Nigel McGuinness, who's just one of many people that you've had a hand in training. Who are some of the others that have gone on to bigger things than he has?
BJ Whitmer, Shark Boy, Matt Stryker, the original one. Excuse me. Well, you know, I worked with a lot of the WCW guys and WWE guys that have come through my place. Charlie Haas, you know, worked through here. A lot of the good cruiserweights, Jamie Noble, Shannon Moore, guys like that. We had a heck of a crew in here at one time. Between the developmental guys, the cruiserweights that had come from WCW, and the guys who had started here with me that were of that level, we had a tremendous crew. That was back in, 2001, 2002.
And of the guys you just mentioned, none of them strike you as being physically imposing. Was that by design, or is that just kind of what fell in your lap and you said, this is what I got to work with, so let's go?
Yeah, well, that was just, you know, I never set out to specialize in cruiserweights. It's just the way it was. We didn't have a lot of guys with size. Well, truthfully, Shark Boy was one of the first people to sign up when I opened my place. And Dean just came to be a referee because at the time nobody was featuring cruiserweights or junior heavyweights. And so he came on. He trained just like a wrestler. So the transition wasn't hard. But when he first came to me, it was just to be a referee. And we needed him to fill in one night and told him to put a mask on. And that was the first match he ever had. And, you know, it escalated from there. But he came initially as a referee because of his size. But, I mean, you know, I didn't set a pattern to say, okay, I'm only going to train cruiserweights or junior heavyweights. That was never the case. Just, you know, basically that's who showed up.
Well, Les, you also, as far as I know, you're still co-host of Ringside Rap on Wednesday nights, aren't you?
I am. Yes, sir. Yeah, I do that with Mike Sempervivi. We have a good time with that. I think next Wednesday we've got Jerry Stubbs. Mr. Olympia, under the mask back in the late 60s and in through the 70s and early 80s and as a guest. And, you know, if you guys are going to be in the Blue Ridge area, stop up and watch or join in if you like.
Yeah. What can, for those who may have already signed up or maybe thinking about it, what can they expect from the seminar?
Well, we're going to, over the 2 days, we're going to try to cover a little bit of everything. Psychology, ring placement, meaning by where you should be at a given time, pacing of a match, facials, body language, timing, working on psychology. We'll do tag team psychology, which is a little different than singles. And we'll have some matches. We'll run some drills, a little bit of everything. And I honestly feel that if you give me your undivided attention for 2 days and let me pick apart, you know, the things that aren't just quite right and give you something else to try, that I can send you away a better worker than when you got there.
You talked a lot about trying to train psychology. Is there one big key ingredient that you think may be a little bit of a lost art in today's culture in wrestling?
Well, you know, they're not so much concerned with the story as they are, you know, for lack of a better term, the cheap pop, you know. And that's not necessarily up to, you know, the problem with the athletes. It's the product that's selling on television. But, you know, to get your audience emotionally invested, I think is still, you know, that's the difference. If you look back over, we'll say the last few WrestleManias, and I know Undertaker is a gimmick, but he's almost a non-gimmick at this point in his career. But other than Taker, the guys who have worked this are wrestlers. They are guys with first and last names. My point being that some of the writers now are so concerned with throwing gimmicks out there that they're not concerned with the in-ring product. But yet they've established over a number of years now that gimmicks, for the most part, are lower or mid-card attractions, meaning they can entertain, but they're not, you know. And I think, you know, with the ratings change, with the lack of depth, that's kind of being proven. Their depth is not there. So, I mean, there's a lot of good young athletes, good entertainers there right now. But if you threw all their names in a hat and drew two out and said, here's your main event for the next pay-per-view, there's a good chance they're not going to draw you anything. Because not due to their lack of having a talent or being athletic or trying hard, it's the way they've been packaged and presented.
One thing that stood out to me kind of reading your bio, kind of getting ready to talk to you tonight, was the great commentators that you'd worked with. Can you talk a little bit about how important that is and sort of what made some of the greats that you worked with so good?
Wow. You know, I think the main thing was not, you know, we talk about when we train wrestlers that the best workers believe what they're doing out there. Like a good method actor becomes the character that they're doing in a movie or in a TV series. And I think a good commentator believes what he's selling you. Plus, his job is to get over the product in the ring and not himself. And when you talk about the guys I've had the opportunity to work with, Gordon Solie, Jim Ross, Bob Cottle, Lance Russell, Charlie Platt, Ed Caprell, all these guys, that was the key ingredient with all of them. They were serious about what they were doing. And they realized that they were the, you know, I don't call it the voice that ties you with a product. And guided your eyes to where it belonged, or made that product palatable to you when sometimes it wasn't. And that's the lost art there. Well, you know, I think it's so important to know when guys say, let Jim Ross come back and call our match, you know, how important that is. Ross can make a mediocre match good. He can make a good match better. Just like, a top flight worker can pick up an average worker and bring him up a notch or two during their match if he indeed is that talented. So it's tremendously important, I think, because I think the fans have to believe in the commentator, and I think that's kind of being lost. You know, so, I mean, every commentator doesn't have to be a character or shouldn't be a character. Well, everybody on your show shouldn't be. And that, you know, I think that pretty much encapsulates the entire industry to a certain degree. Everything is kind of open over time. But with commentators, it's not necessary to be funny or glib or a heel. You know, every color guy doesn't have to be try to be Bobby Heenan. The point is to get the product in the ring over. And I think they lose sight of that.
I think you could definitely, people in the generation prior to me, when they close their eyes, they probably hear Golden Solie calling the match. If you think about a wrestling match, that's what they think. My generation, when we close our eyes, we hear Jim Ross. And I think the generation of wrestling fans now, they don't have that. Is there anybody that you think is out there that's capable of sort of taking that step?
Well, you know what, I think there's probably, there's probably a lot of, there's certainly somebody out there. But here again, it comes back to the center of the problem, if that's what you want to call it, is the fact that they aren't allowed, you know, Ross is given a lot of leeway because of who he is, of his status. Jerry Lawler could be a lot more serious if there wasn't somebody in his ear telling him to be a clown. So there's probably a lot of guys that could listen to Solie or listen to Cottle or listen to myself or, you know, listen to any of us from that era that sold the product as serious and not so much about getting ourselves over and could, you know, copy that or imitate that or call it whatever you like, you know, in more of a current context. Only if they were allowed. See, that was the one thing that we were blessed with. We didn't have anybody in there. Oh, I shouldn't say that. We had director in here saying, you know, you got a cue to commercial in 2 minutes or thing, or don't forget to plug this or that. But nobody tried to put words in our mouth like they have now. And I think that's part of the problem across the board is too much micromanaging, you know. In a creative business, is not allowed to be creative. That seems to be counterproductive.
Yeah. Well, Les, before we let you go, back to the seminars on Saturday and Sunday, my understanding is that at the DSCW show on Saturday, some of the people from the seminar will be booked in matches based on what takes place during the day. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the process will be, but yes, as I understand it, that will be the case. And I guess I'm going to help Woody in some fashion select these guys or put the matches together. So we should have some fun with that as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And, if you can't get out for the training, come out for the show and say hello.
All right, and if you want to remind people again where they can sign up for that.
Sure. They can go to email dscwrestling@yahoo.com or call Woody at 706-889-1803, and that's just coming Saturday and Sunday, the 13th and 14th in Blue Ridge, Georgia. So come on out. And, guys, thanks for having me on and for plugging the gig. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thanks for calling.
All right, guys. Take care.
You too.
Thanks, Les.
All right. Well, as I mentioned last week, the month of October, we will be commercial-free because we need to update some ads. So want to remind everybody out there that might want to send in a 30-second ad about your promotion or your shows, you can send those to rich@georgiawrestlinghistory.com. And our other guest tonight, who probably will be calling any minute now, is the Platinum Championship Wrestling champion, who was our first guest on our first show last year, just after winning that same title at Sacred Ground Chapter 2. This year, he defeated Shane Marks to unify the Empire title with the PCW title. And I believe that was Matt who was...
Yeah, what was that?
What? I was just thinking about, you know, some stuff that I predicted. That's all.
Yeah. What was your prediction? Remind our listeners.
You know, I believe I told Shane Marks that when he woke up the day after, that he would be no longer a champion. And as it were, the Oracle had spoken, and the demigod made it so. Oh, good times, was it? If you weren't in Porterdale two Saturdays ago, you are a damn fool. You can write it down that I said it.
Hey, while we got a second here, what do you guys think about the announcement today of the booking change at Ring of Honor?
Yeah.
We
yeah,
were just talking
about
that a little earlier.
Did y'all just hear? I just got a text. Somebody said Brian Gerwitz is gone too as head writer of WWE.
Oh.
I have not verified that, but I did get some inside information telling me that. So
that's what happens when you have the worst ratings in 15 years, I guess. Huh?
I swear to my time. Fall has fell in the wrestling business, boys. They are dropping like flies. But I think I had a long conversation with somebody yesterday about ROH. Did you hear any of what went on to sort of lead to this, Larry?
Well, the only thing I heard is that there was some talk that it may have had to do with the finish that they did, but what I understood is that probably didn't really have anything to do with it. That this has been brewing. This has been brewing for a while.
I just assumed that finish might have been the straw that broke the camel's back, and I kind of went off on a rant because I am first and foremost just a fan of wrestling. That's all I am, and I take that very seriously. And when I read what happened, I thought, well, shit, that's actually a really good thing that ROH just tried. I know it might not be, it wasn't perfect. You can do that. You can have a finish, and you can still do what you did. But I thought at least they were getting sort of outside of their comfort zone and trying something new. For those of us who don't know, they had a 35-minute match between Jay Lethal and Kevin Steen. And apparently before the match was able to actually be finished with a pinfall or submission or counter or anything like that, Steen rolls out, has an interaction with Lethal's family at ringside. The mother throws a drink on him. He spits on the mother. Jay Lethal obviously goes absolutely bonkers. They have a giant pull apart. I think Steen and his crew kind of pull down some of the set. It's just this giant fracas that ends the show. Well, the ROH fandom cannot accept that they didn't see a finish in a Big Show match. Now, for those of us who have been conditioned by certain people here, that's not even something I balk at. It happens. You know, it was a setup for something down the road, and they didn't have the patience to deal with it. Now, yes, ROH has kind of treated their fans a little poorly over the last year, and especially if you look at where they were maybe 6 years ago compared to now. I understand those fans may not have a lot of patience left, but, you know, if you're in the gang with ROH and this is your company that you love to support, sometimes you just got to go with it and see where it goes. And they didn't do that, apparently, and they were very vocal about how upset they were. So that kind of put the ball in motion for what happened today.
Well, I think it speaks volumes about the whole problem with Ring of Honor. I mean, they're appealing to a very small fan base that, and they can, you know, if they go, it's a dead end for them. They cannot grow if they continue to channel the product to appeal to that very small fan base that they have.
Absolutely. And they're not a fan base that can be satisfied either.
No.
That same fan base was upset when they had Bryan Danielson and CM Punk and Samoa Joe also there. They still had things to complain about. And I think at some point they might have realized how good they had it and didn't appreciate it. But instead of taking a step back and saying, look, we might have had a hand in all this too, they kind of went the other way with it. And they did what sort of our internet crowd, which I'm a part of, and I'm guilty of some of the same things I complain about them doing. But they did it in mass, and they did it very vocally. And so now, you know, who knows? This could be the beginning of the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wonder how far does Sinclair go with this this whole thing. I think that, to my way of looking at it, they have very little to lose by just trying something completely different at this point. Mm-hmm. They've just done, you know, because what are they going to lose? The 400 or 300 or whatever that comes to their live shows? And, you know, they might as well go for broke.
Right. Swing for the fences. And, I mean, I guess Delirious is currently, you know, he was already in the position. So I guess if they go that route, then you're just doing more of the same, and it just seems to be asking for trouble.
Yeah, I can't see that he's really going to, I mean, nothing against him, but I hope they go in another direction.
Yeah, I would certainly hope so, too.
Well, speaking of someone who went for broke at Sacred Ground Chapter 3, we do now have the demigod himself, Mason, the PCW champion, and I guess technically Empire champion as well.
You need a belt to prop your feet up on.
Exactly. Exactly. Well said. How are you
doing
tonight, Matt Hank?
I'm doing good. How's it, old noggin, champ?
Not too bad. So just come out tomorrow. So not quite as pretty as I used to be, but you know, I'll make it. Jonathan Williams, how are you this evening, sir?
I'm doing all right. I don't have any stitches to be removed tomorrow, so I guess I'm in certain ways a little better than you, but I'm not a champion either, or a demigod for that matter.
Both are great distinctions, yes, sir.
So I think one thing that a lot of people are curious about, for those who were not there or have not heard, Mason, in the course of defeating Shane Marks at Sacred Ground Chapter 3, bashed his head. Did you hit it against the floor or against a bench?
It was against a bench.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you wrestled a good bit of that match. You jumped off the top rope on to the outside of the ring, hit your head.
Yeah.
Yes, and wrestled a good bit of the match with your face covered in blood and just gushing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one thing, at least that I'm curious about, is when will you be able to get back in the ring? I'm assuming if the stitches are out tomorrow, then not too far in the future.
You know, the only thing keeping me out of the ring is just, you know, a time and a place. At this moment, I know I'm slated to be back in Porterdale on October 20th. And I believe prior to that, I'm at Monstrosity Championship Wrestling. Jonathan, can you tell me the date and time on that?
I've heard rumors of a show in November, November 16th.
But November?
Yes.
Maybe it did affect him a little bit more than we thought. He's not blue.
Never mind then. I thought it was October 16th.
I guess you've got a title defense the 20th. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. I guess
for the weary.
Fifth Column, whom I'd never seen before the Platinum Royal that same afternoon. Threw everyone out, and I think it was the first time that we didn't have the match after the Platinum Royal where the guy who throws out the most people takes on the last guy in the ring. You know, there's no need for that with Fifth Column. So it'll be interesting kind of wrestling a guy with no tape, so to speak. You know, the Shane Marks I've known, you know, 10 years. But Fifth Column, you know, I have one Platinum Royal to go off of.
that faceless entity who none of us had. I didn't even get his name right. I was calling him Contra to White Power for most of the night.
Similar style, I suppose. He's a bit larger than Dwight Power, but yeah.
Do you have any idea who that might be under that black suit and mask?
I mean, he looked to be slightly larger than I. A good build. I mean, there's no talent. There's no talent, and I mean it. It could be Mike Cannon. It could be, maybe if Scott Steele lost some weight. who knows? That's the disadvantage I have right now. It's a guessing game. But just going off what I know at this point. I could not
understand what it was he wanted. Now, as you were preparing for your match in the main event, did you have a chance to see much of what went on, and what did you think about Sacred Ground overall?
A good show. It was a good show. Yeah. Everyone kind of kept coming to the back and, kind of making eyes like, you're in the main, right? So, like, this is a good show. But no, I mean, everything, that's the idea of Sacred Ground. That I think that's the idea that we always try and present with Sacred Ground, is that every single, it's the cliche, every single match is a main eventer, and it's just, proof positive when you have Hayden Young and Chip Day going in the first match after the Platinum Royal, right? Like, those are two guys that draw a crowd, any city, you name it, in Georgia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the match after the Platinum Royal. Like, it's just, it was a great show. It was Simon Sermon, Rick Michaels, all the tag matches, particularly the finals were great, but the first two rounds, wow, and I guess Jacob Ashworth, I know you've had him on the show, and he got banged up, but I hope he's healing okay.
It's a tough time for everybody.
yeah. I wouldn't want to trade with him. It's one of those where I'll take a few stitches in the head instead of a cracked vertebrae.
Speaking of Jacob Ashworth and Rick Michaels and that whole title situation up in Pro Wrestling Resurrection, Jacob was the number one contender for the title after the Jagged Edge was stripped because of his injury. And from what I understand, yesterday there was some frantic scrambling that happened, and Rick Michaels is the new champion up there. So,
oh, is that right? Really?
Yeah.
All right, you want another belt?
Well done, Rick Michaels.
You think about maybe getting another belt? Just walk in there and challenge. They'll take you.
I tell you, I don't think I want to be number one contender there. But I think I'll pass. Maybe I'll get a partner and go for a tag belts or something. I don't know. I don't think I'll be number one contender there.
Then there was a definite shift in sort of your, let's say, focus over the last couple years. Could you have imagined, 2 years ago, when you're just doing what you're doing, that you would be in the main event of two straight Sacred Grounds, and you would leave with, and you would have to fight unsurmountable odds both times, and you'd still walk out of there toting the belt?
The crazy thing about it is how long I've known all these people. I met Stephen Platinum in 2003. I met Shane Marks in 2004. We trained together, and it was one of those where he came in and he was the phenom, like, immediately, right? Like, he was the guy that came in, and any move that Steve taught, he just, like, immediately got it. And, I had the disadvantage of, only having my initial 3 months in 2003 of training in Atlanta before I moved down to Tallahassee. And we actually had Marty Jannetty training down there, which was awesome. But that was during the times that Marty was kind of getting in some trouble. And, you know, the training kind of came sporadically, and the matches came very sporadically, and you know, it got very behind, and you know, the tales of you know, buying a ring and going to Relapse and going to Samstone and all that, you know, where you really just trying to get matches in, you know, it's just, it's the only thing that really hones your skills, is just getting a lot and a lot and a lot of matches. And so, yeah, first of all, thank you, Matt. But you're right. It's the last 3 years are just kind of, you know, growing with PCW and then, you know, having the split that it had last November with, you know, with Shane Marks turning his back on everyone and then kind of having the weight put on my shoulders of you know, that this can't stand. And, you know, at the front, I think you kind of have me standing with Steve and with Jay and a couple other guys who have been there since the start, who just, you know, betrayal doesn't even begin to speak as to, you know, the depths of just this man coming and taking everything from us, you know, down to our down to our identity, you know. So that was tough, but I was happy to be that person and to, you know, to be the one to bring it back, to bring back PCW to where that's the banner that's flying in Porterdale.
And of all the things that went on at Sacred Ground, all the things to take home and remember, I think for the hardcores, one thing that shocked me the most was after Shane Marks lost the belt, he handed it to Steve, he shook your hand, yeah, and he left. Do you think that marks, no pun intended, a change in him, or was it just, you know, at the end of the day, is he just a warrior and he realized he'd been bested?
You know, I've wondered that myself, and if there's one thing I know is that we haven't seen the last of Shane Marks, and I think that was just sort of his last moment of, you know, trying to bow out and maybe reformulate. I don't know what to expect of him anymore. You know, I would hope that we would once get the Shane Marks that we knew back, but how would you ever know, right?
Right.
It'd take a long time to bandage that wound, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. It was a bit bizarre, honestly, after that entire match of, you know, the ether rack.
I can imagine that you barely registered,
you know,
it, given the fact that you're oozing from your head.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about a whole lot, really. You know, I was just trying to get through it. You know, I was thinking, you know, how to, you know, just tap them or, you know, tap them out or pin them was, you know, the only thing that was going through my head, just get out of there as soon as I could because I didn't know how long I had, you know?
And there was a certain there was a noticeable shift in urgency as you kind of laid there and those first drops of blood hit the ground and we really can't tell how bad it is. Oh, okay, he banged himself up and he's tough. And then you kind of turn and everybody sees what you're thinking. And
yeah,
it's sort of like it went into overdrive at that point, and you had to get it done. And I couldn't believe it. I honestly could not believe that you were able to stay with it with just gallons of blood, just so much blood.
Matt, how funny was it? Fred Yehi was sitting next to us at that point.
It was great. Fred's first reaction was, oh, man, oh, he's got it going now. Oh, wait, no. Oh, God, I got to get a towel. I'm gone.
Nope. Yeah, everyone had gauze and bandages sort of ready for me. You know, it's funny when you look back at all the pictures from Sacred Ground. There's pictures where I'm good looking. There's pictures where I'm just covered in just pints of blood, and then like I'm bandaged at the end. And it's only because like all the boys from the back ran out, and they already had gauze in hand to bandage me in the ring. So I guess they saw it. What's that?
It was. It's by far the worst I've ever seen live, for sure. I mean, it was, as the blood sort of made its way from head to face, you could start to get an idea of, oh my God, that's not a cut, that's a chunk.
Yeah.
Then we started piecing the puzzle together. He must have hit the bench, and then I talked to people after, so I said, yeah, he hit the bench because we felt it shake.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You know, a foot to the right or the left, and you know, I probably go to the floor and probably nothing, you know, but a foot lower, and it you know, I'm without my right eye for the rest of my life. So.
Right.
I'll take a few stitches, you know. But I'll take that over the, you know, some of the other alternatives that I could have rolled the dice on. So, but you know, no concussions or anything like that. No, you know, I asked if they'd give me some blood. They said no. Then my gods don't. My God can't take human blood transfusions. And I said, okay.
It's only ambrosia and virgins for you. That's all they could prescribe.
Yeah, exactly. They go home and get some coconut, some tangerine, and some pineapple. And mix that up. So I did. It was good. So
how
was
it able to stay with it? I mean, of all the people that kind of came and went, and not necessarily just in PCW, but in any wrestling promotion here that's on this level, you just see guys kind of float in and float out. And I can never remember a time that you were ever away for any noticeable period.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that a few of us always joked about between myself, Jay Fury, and Pandora. Of, you know, how many weeks could we go consecutively without missing a show? Because it's, you know, it's something that we had always been a part of, something that we loved, something that we sort of took a bit of ownership in. It's obviously Steve's, but we, you know, we prided as ours because we're mainstays. And I think one year I was traveling at the end of the year, and I want to say Jay sent me a text to, you know, ha ha, you finally missed one, and it was like week, you know, 50 of the year. But no, it's a labor of love, you know. It's something that you never really mind doing, you know. Even if you're no matter what kind of sacrifices you're making, you're still, you know, once you get there, you know, you love it.
Hey, Mason, we've talked about how a lot of the other PCW people that started out there, or people that made a name for themselves there, are now wrestling pretty much all over the place: Rampage, UIW, PWR, Anarchy. Do you have any intention of branching out and proving your worth elsewhere?
Yeah, that's a good question. At the moment, I haven't been approached, and I'm actually going to kind of enjoy the time. I've been a bit behind at the old Nirvana Ranch, and looking forward to catching up on a little R&R and a little time around here. But yeah, I may look into it down the road, and I'll keep you posted.
All right. Well, yeah. Please let us know.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right, gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Who won't have you. All right.
What's that?
I said, I don't think there's anybody who won't have you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, I've heard that you may be looking into management, you know, and I would certainly be interested in some Matt Hankins management. And Jonathan, of course, I've you know, you've always expressed interest in coming down to the ranch. You're always welcome down here. There's always a room for you. Down here at the Nirvana Ranch. So you gentlemen just let me know a time and a place.
Okay, well, I've always expressed interest. I think you're the one that's expressed the interest in recruiting me, but I don't know. I'm impressed with what I've seen, especially recently, so I'm still taking that into consideration for sure.
I don't even recruiting you. I mean, you know, for a family down here at the Nirvana Ranch, you know, we all work together. I think the witness that we've come to know him recently is going to go back to the ranch and do some work there. So, I might be solo for a while, but the ranch is taken care of. That's what's important. And like I said, you're always welcome down here. You're always welcome, Jonathan Williams.
All right. Well, I definitely will take you up on that sometime soon.
But Mason, I want to thank you. You were our first guest a year ago on the very first edition of Georgia Wrestling Now. And so that was one of the reasons why I asked you to call in again tonight. So I appreciate you calling, and keep up the good work, and keep those keep that wound clean.
Good to be
here.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Infection is your enemy. Infection is your enemy.
Shame, Mark. Good night, gentlemen. Good speaking with you.
Heart good to get to do that. Not have to listen to Shane Marks for, oh, man, that's great. That is great. I know he's walking around somewhere in the house beltless. Beltless in the world!
Well, I think before Mason came on, we were talking about the situation with Ring of Honor, and I heard rumors of a similar situation in Rampage. Do you know anything about that, Larry? Behind the scenes shakeup recently that.
Oh well, the of course Bill Behrens is gone. They've changed the announced team. It will now be Josh Wheeler and the returning Nigel Sherrod will be the TV announced team, and Brad Storm, who has been associated with WWA4, is there as, I think he's going to co-host the 30-minute rewind show that they do, and he's also doing the backstage/locker room interviews. So, of course, Dan Masters will still be the doing all the ring announcing, but this is the first time that the TV announcers were actually put on camera. They were at ringside to open all three episodes that were taped. So That is a change, and I think it's kind of a shame. I enjoyed Bill Behrens on commentary there, and I think, you know, to have a veteran presence like that was probably a good thing for them. I'm curious to see how Josh Wheeler and Nigel mesh as a team on the commentary.
Yeah, well,
not an easy thing to do. Tell you that, not easy.
Seems like things are always changing at Rampage, but, you know, I guess they know what they're doing, and the shows have been enjoyable over the past couple of months, that's for sure. So,
you know, the other thing on Sunday was, I guess, boy, that's just yesterday now. Jeez, I can hardly believe that. Simon Sermon was a no-show. So they had to change that. Tommy Too Much wasn't going to be able to be there, but they were expecting Simon, so the Exotic Ones, the direction they were doing with Exotics and BFFs had to be placed on hold. So that I don't think that anything's going to come out of that for Doctoberfest because they couldn't shoot anything for it.
Hmm. Well, that's unlike Simon, so I'm
that's
sure
another
he had
shocker.
A good excuse.
Yeah. Did they also drop their NWA affiliation as well?
I didn't ask that, but clearly they must have because there's absolutely no mention of it now.
Yeah, I think they just did it a little more quietly than some other people did.
Yeah, so wow. I got Jonathan and I were talking about that. What is it? Is you said, Jonathan, that maybe NWA Action is the only Georgia promotion that may still be retaining the NWA?
Yeah, I'm not for sure of that. I haven't talked to anyone there or anything, but I think they still, you know, just looking at their website and things like that, I still see it prominently displayed. I'm checking it now just to double check. I think they've got a show this
Georgia
Saturday as well.
Does that
well,
thing even exist?
I don't know. They canceled their last show.
They canceled their last go around.
Yeah, there is still a very, very large NWA logo on the NWAaction.com, as well as a big picture of Buff Bagwell. So I guess he's going to be there at one of their upcoming shows.
I guess if anybody would benefit from them, they would certainly have more to lose by dropping it than either Anarchy or Rampage. I think those two shows will certainly stand on their own with no assistance.
I would agree.
And it's not like although Sean Tempers is still going to be the NWA North American champion, at least for the foreseeable future, he has not been stripped of the belt or dropped the belt. But they're not going to feature that, I don't believe, in Anarchy anymore, for obvious reasons.
Right. Mm-hmm. The ever-changing world that we live in.
Well, guys, we kind of need to wrap things up. But speaking of Anarchy, do you, Larry, do you know anything about their show this Saturday? Any of the matches that are scheduled or anything?
Well, you know, if you go to GWH News, we've got the poster up there. And
GWHnews.com, that is.
You know that GWHnews.com?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of affiliate site with Georgia Wrestling History, where you now have all the news and all the wonderful stuff. They're featuring a 10-man tag this Saturday as their go-home show for Fright Night, which will be on October 27th. But they're doing a 10-man tag. The looks like the Elite versus what might be called Team Anarchy, led by Michael Judas. That's going to be their main event.
All right. Well, that sounds like that should be interesting. That whole rivalry has been going for quite a while now. And I think we've pretty much covered every show that's coming up this weekend already. So,
is PWA next weekend?
Well, I'm at GWH News right now looking at the upcoming events. Let's see if it is.
Please. I was there their last show, and they announced that it was going to be October X, but
I believe it's the 20th.
Yeah, I think that's what I think I remember. Since they stopped going every 2 weeks, I get confused. When people start shifting dates around on me, I can't. My Friday nights are all weird. I'm out of sorts, boys.
But by the way, did you guys catch that Jacob Ashford is stepping away from wrestling altogether?
Yes, we did catch that. I
did not.
That's
catch
all
that.
I know. Yeah, he put out something on social media that said that something had come up and he was kind of pulling back for a little while. So I hope it's more temporary than it is permanent, because I certainly, as I told him last week, I think he's got a bright future ahead of him, and I hope whatever it may be, I hope it gets taken care of, and I hope he can get back healthy and ready to go.
Yeah, I see that now on Facebook. So, oh well. Well, hopefully he'll sort things out and come back. He's still young and still strong. Hopefully he'll remain that way. But anyway, that is it for the anniversary edition of Georgia Wrestling Now. As Larry mentioned, you can go to gwhnews.com to find out about upcoming events and his reports on previous shows. There's also georgiawrestlinghistory.com, which I think at this point pretty much just redirects to gwhnews.com. And wrestlingwithpopculture.com. You can read reviews of tomorrow. I'm posting a review of the new CM Punk DVD, among other things. So, is there anything I'm forgetting?
I think you covered it all, buddy.
Next week's guest will be the new PWR champion, Rick Michaels.
Oh, get your recorders ready, kids. Oh, get them ready. Oh.
He is our only guest because I feel like...
You're damn right he is.
So, next week should be interesting. So, everybody tune in for that. On that note, we will be back next Monday. And thanks to Larry Goodman for sitting in tonight.
Thanks a lot.
We thank you for listening to the Tripod, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Thank you for your continued support.